Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 87. Dave, we hit New Year's yesterday at 4 o'clock, the start of the new NFL season, and things are fast and furious. It's been a busy 20 hours for us so far, a lot of news, a lot of stuff going on, and this is a special edition of the Terrible Podcast, and I'm pleased to tell everybody that we'll have Matt Williamson from ESPN.com and Scouts Inc. on with us for the second half of this show and get his thoughts on some of what's been going on. But Dave, did you get any sleep last night?
Not much. I don't know if you follow me on Twitter. I was tossing and turning about 4 or 5 in the morning. So I got about 4 hours of sleep, I think. Woke up with a little headache this morning, but I'm probable and I'm going to play today.
Good stuff. Well, let's get right in it. As always, as it seemed to be the case every day for the past 6 weeks, we're going to lead it off with Mike Wallace. And I've got to get into a few things. We saw receivers go off the board fast and furious here in the first 20 hours. We can go through the names in a minute. But the point is, the speed of receivers going off the board doesn't make an offer sheet to Mike Wallace more likely or less likely. You know, teams went out and got who they wanted. Some people got their guy, some people didn't, but that's the nature of free agency. I've said all along, Mike Wallace is coming back to the Steelers. You and I are in the same camp. I said going into today, going into free agency was a 99% chance he'd be back. I'm willing to go 99.5% chance now. And if we get to 4 o'clock, you know, Thursday afternoon or Friday afternoon, I'll put it at 100%. If this offer sheet doesn't get signed in the first 3 days, Mike Wallace is going to be back with the Steelers.
Yeah, and we mentioned as to why. Teams don't start at the bottom. They go after their targets early in free agency. Because you're working with salary cap space. The more expensive the player, you have to get nailed down and the bigger priority that is or isn't to a team. And you got, you know, look at a team like New England who's still, I think we can, we pretty much had ruled out San Francisco already after they signed Randy Moss. And even now, you know, that they're having some of the other wide receivers come in for a visit here. Which makes it even more likely that they're not going to be players in this. New England and Cincinnati still are the two, you know, teams that if anything were going to happen, you would assume that it'd be those two teams, not the Buffalo Bills, as Jerry Dulac likes to suggest this morning, and we'll get into that in a minute. But you think about it too. All these big contracts not only affect you know, Mike Wallace a little bit, because I mean, let's face it. It's supply and demand and the restrictions involved in it and what one team is willing to pay on top of it. But New England also has to get a new deal worked out with Wes Welker. And if you don't think Wes Welker and his agent are looking at these numbers coming across too, yeah, you know, you got another thing coming. That's a big priority for them too.
Right, and of course, just to be clear, they franchised him this year at $9.5 million, and you're talking about a longer-term deal.
Exactly, and you know, he's going to want a longer term deal before all this thing is said and done, and I think that's kind of got them on a hold up of what they're doing, because the Patriots were mighty quiet on day one, just like the Steelers were. And when you look at some of these deals, when you look at the Vincent Jackson deal, you know, 5 years for a bunch of fives, 8 fives in fact. You know, you would say, well, that breaks down to a 5 year 11,000. 101,000, blah, 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 and more ones. But in essence, that deal, David, is a 2-year deal worth $26 million, because they had the salary cap space. They did not give a signing bonus in that deal, so there's no proration to worry about. The last 3 years of the contract are not guaranteed at all. So in essence, you have a $13 million contract average. Now, you know, you got to be careful when you're dealing with those averages, and you also have to look at the point that the Buccaneers had a whole hell of a lot of cap space to spend. But, you know, and then you turn around and you look at the Calvin Johnson deal this morning, which is reportedly $132 million and includes $60 million guaranteed. We'll have to see exactly what that guaranteed is, how much new money over old money was included in that deal, because that's a big underlying factor here, and we don't have those complete contract numbers.
Well, but I'll tell you, I think we can look at Calvin Johnson's contract and look at his age and say he's going to make all that money. I think, you know, like we talked about with some of the Steelers stuff that was pushed out, you know, this is a guy like Larry Fitzgerald on his $120 million contract. I think you can say, you know, barring something unforeseen, it's not, I mean, I would expect Calvin Johnson to see 100 to 100 to the whole thing. I mean, I expect that they probably arranged this so that it's not front or back loaded, that they wanted to get this $21 million cap number for this year down, which this will obviously do because there'll be a big signing bonus. But, you know, I think Calvin Johnson's going to see all this money.
And he deserved it. And he deserved it, too.
Yeah, no question.
I mean, that guy.
Fitzgerald are the two best. You know, I'll put Andre Johnson a close third. But they're those are the elite at the position. And, you know, I don't even think you can put a guy like Wes Welker in that conversation. Those three guys are different. They're physically bigger, more imposing, and they're the best in the game.
Yep, and Marquise Colston, you know, signed a 5-year, $40 million contract with the Saints, of which $19 million reported is guaranteed. Now, we'll have to see exactly how that contract breaks down. Supposedly, from what I'm hearing, it's not so $19 million guaranteed, but we'll know when those numbers are released, probably today. The Redskins, boy, I don't know what I mean, Pierre Garçon, to me, he's a number two type guy, 5-year, $42.5 million contract with $20.5 million of it being guaranteed. The deal also included $11 million signing bonus. So, you know, that would leave you to believe that there's a second-year base salary that's guaranteed to go along with that, and we'll have to see how that contract shakes out.
And I will tell you, Bill Polian was on ESPN today, you know, regardless of what people think of Bill Polian, he's known as a relatively good talent evaluator. He really thinks Garçon could be a number one receiver.
Yet to be seen. You got to remember he's going to have a rookie quarterback that he's working
with.
Sure,
all those things are true. Just telling you what his opinion is, that he will rise to that occasion. Big physical guy, very hard worker, good enough speed. Really felt like this was a good opportunity and a good signing.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying the guy really has, I mean, he in limited proven action thus far, and of course we all, these guys get paid a lot of potential, and he definitely has some, but this definitely signals the end for what's his name, Moss over there, for sure.
Santana Moss, yep.
Because Josh Morgan was also signed to a 5-year, a more friendly type deal, I think, that's voidable after the first 2 years, I think I read. Robert Meacham, a guy who we talked about on the show yesterday, I think this guy is a very underrated receiver, David. A lot of people will disagree with me. I think he's he's not in the level of a Vincent Jackson and all, but I think it gives the Chargers the ability to still stretch the field. I think Meacham was kind of lost in the bunch of the plethora of receivers that the Saints had over the last several seasons. I think Meacham, 4-year, $25 million, that evidently included $14 million in guarantee in the first 2 years of that deal. The biggest surprise, though, would you agree with me, out of probably all the news yesterday, is Reggie Wayne re-signing and going back with the Colts on a 3-year deal worth $17.5 million, that included $7.5 million signing bonus.
Yeah, I think that's a surprise. Everybody kind of thought Reggie might get, you know, tie his future to wherever Peyton Manning goes. You listen to it and you listen to the conversations and you say, you don't want to set, you don't want to be the Colts and have Andrew Luck there and have him no talent bunch of guys to throw to. And obviously the Redskins are thinking the same thing. You want to have a young quarterback. If you're going to put him right in there, you want to have your offensive tackle set. And you want to have talented receivers to throw to. And they felt like Reggie Wayne could be, this is maybe a situation a little bit like Hines Ward a couple years ago, is still a very capable receiver. Let's not downplay his skills. And he's a guy who could mentor some young guys. And this was the thought process in Indianapolis that, you know, he's not overly expensive. He's a talented guy. He's a fan favorite. He's a hardworking guy, and he can mentor some of these young guys, and he'll be a good fit with Andrew Luck. But, yeah, as you said, I think this caught most of the people who cover the NFL by surprise.
Yeah, most definitely. And let's circle back now to Jerry Dulac and his comment this morning I mean, first of all, let's start with some comments on Twitter, even to us, after I posted the link to the story. And then I know you've got a lot to want to save your beatdown of it last year. CPACLO32, I hope I said that right, responded back, Jerry's on drugs if he thinks the Bills will part with the 10th overall pick for Wallace. Let's see. Another one here from MTW247 on Twitter to me. Bills pick number 10 seems like a steep price to pay. I'll add my thoughts onto this after you, but go after it, David.
Jerry missed it here. You know, look, you guys miss it. Guys have missed this Wallace story all along. Mark Cabali wrote an article this morning. One of the things that I think Dave and I are going to fall in the same category here, and I don't ever presume to speak for Dave, but I don't think Dave and I are at all shocked by the money that we've seen. I've seen guys, Dale Lawley said, you know, express some surprise at the money Meacham got. I'm not surprised at the money Vincent Jackson got. I don't think there's a guy out there that I'm surprised about the money they got. I think this is pretty much in line with what we thought. Top guys getting long-term deals in the $9 to $11 million range, and then guys falling in line below that. And I think kind of everything has been where it's been. So I don't think any of that has affected the Mike Wallace market. What Jerry Dulac said, you know, he's kind of made the inference that because this happened quickly, then an offer sheet is more likely. Look, the speed of how this happened doesn't have any impact on how this is going to go for Mike Wallace. As we have said all along, if a team's going to come knocking on the door, they are going to be knocking on the door in the next day or two, and if that doesn't happen, this isn't going to happen. The whole idea of Buffalo putting in, giving Stevie Johnson $36 million or $37 million over 5 years, and then turning around and giving up the 10th pick in the draft, when they're also, you know, he gives the caveat that if they don't sign Mario Williams, and it looks like they're going to sign Mario Williams, which will make the whole conversation moot anyway. But there's just no way Buffalo's going after a second receiver and giving up the 10th pick in the draft. It's just he missed the mark on that, and that's just, you know, he just simply got it wrong. That's not good insight.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. The Stevie Johnson, look, they're not going to that's your guy over there right now. That's the guy that you're going to use to stretch the field on top of it. I agree. I mean, a number, you know, give up the number 10 pick. Are you kidding me? With the cost of these draft picks now, first rounders coming down, that spot's way more too valuable. And to throw.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm telling you, all of a sudden, if somebody says it's the number 10 pick, that changes my view versus the number 30 pick about, you know, whether the, you know, if Justin Blackman's on the board at 10, or, you know, the Steelers can fill, you know, the guys they can get at 10 actually makes the whole equation slightly different. But there's no way Buffalo is doing this. So.
Absolutely. And, you know, people think I wrote a post, people claim on one of my recent posts that I have a negative tone about Mike Wallace. I think they misinterpreted I'm very blunt. Writer David, I don't have skills enough to project a negative tone. I just write blunt. I just write blunt and from the heart and use facts. And I said in there, and this was in my post about breaking down the Vincent Jackson contract yesterday. If you want to read it up on Steelers Depot, basically saying that if the way the contract is structured and with the guaranteed money that Jackson got of the $26 million, and there's no way that the Steelers are going to give that much guaranteed money up front to Mike Wallace. And I stated in there, Mike Wallace is fooling himself if he thinks that the Steelers are going to give him that type of money. That's a blunt statement. That's not a gig at Mike Wallace saying that, oh, he shouldn't be expecting that type of money. Hey, Mike Wallace is going to get paid either this year or next year, okay? He is a top-notch wide receiver in the NFL. But
right, and a Steelers fan seemed to miss the mark that these 8 games – make Mike Wallace is an average guy. Look, he certainly made the Pro Bowl on the first 8 games, and he wasn't as productive in the next 8 games. But, you know, as you have pointed out many times, it is a receiving group. And to not recognize that some of Antonio Brown's emergence is due to Mike Wallace is missing some of the points. Look, one of the things I love about the conversations that Kevin Colbert had when discussing Mike Wallace, besides him saying we hold all the cards, which I thought was the best line of the offseason, is that Mike Wallace has room for improvement. Look, this guy is not a finished product at age 25. There is room to become a better receiver, and Todd Haley and Mike Tomlin have every intent to coach him up and make him a better receiver.
I definitely agree. Did you say he was average?
No, I said Steeler fans think he's an average receiver.
I guess that's a little straw man there, but
No, there are people on Twitter who are very eager to see Mike Wallace walk for, you know, a late first round pick. They'd be happy to see it. We both think that's a mistake.
Right, and there's a lot of people that really that know the value of him too and want him back, and we're both in that category. But my preface was, you know, Steelers can get close to a kind of deal like this, but it's not going to be in upfront guaranteed money. It's just not going to happen. They don't have the cap space for it. Realistically, they need a first-year cap hit on him in 2012 of roughly $4.5 to $5 million at top. So there's no way to do that deal other than the way that I'm suggesting, and that's to give, you know, probably $16 to $18 million of it in a signing bonus that can be stretched out or prorated over 5 years, and the rest of it go along in a year two roster bonus. Now, from what I've seen, they've not been ones to guarantee a year two base salary. It makes more sense to put it as a roster bonus unguaranteed. I'm not saying that it won't get done that way, but I'm saying that to put the guaranteed money that some of these guys are getting when they ink their name to this contract, it is just not going to happen. And that was thus my statement, saying that it was a blanket statement. It wasn't a jab at Mike Wallace that he's foolish to think that's going to happen, type thing. So, you know, let's just be clear on that. And here's the thing. People are continue to worry about next year with Antonio Brown and Emmanuel Sanders. And we touched on this. Let's wait till Emmanuel Sanders plays a full season and has 800-900 yards receiving and 70 to, you know, 80 catches before we're already putting him as a top free agent or restricted free agent on the market. Now, Antonio Brown certainly can build on what he did last year and duplicate what he did last year, but once again, he will be a restricted free agent that we could go through this process again and place a first round tender on him. And if Mike Wallace only signs a one-year tender, and is not signed to a long-term deal, should he stay, well, then he gets the franchise tag next year. You kind of work with that going forward. And, you know, people say, well, what if he holds out disgruntled and all like that? Look, this guy needs the accrued season to become a unrestricted free agent, a la kind of what DeSean Jackson thought he was going to go through this past season. He cannot afford to sit out. Not only does it drops his value, but he could find himself right back in a restricted free agent role again. So,
yeah, and let's not discount that $2.7 million is a fair chunk of change. He hasn't made that kind of money yet in his career either.
Right, but does he want to play? Does he want to play under that? No. I mean, he wants a long-term deal, but on top of it, the Steelers want to give him what they deem as fair and something they can work with on top of it.
Yeah, the whole idea is, look, this is how the collective bargaining agreement works. You get $2.7 million. You could, you know, that's the way it goes. It's not it's not no money, and it's you take out an insurance policy. Do guys get hurt? Sure, but you don't go in playing. None of these guys go in playing the sport as if they're going to get, you know, have a season-ending, career-ending injury on their next season. So my last comment on Wallace is Mark Cabali just tweeted that if somebody does offer, he doesn't expect the Steelers to match. Again, I'll just say, obviously, everything would be contingent on the offer. The Steelers are going to match if it's anywhere within their capability of doing it. If it's not a $20 million front-loaded first season, if that number in the first season is anything kind of less than $14 or $15 million, the Steelers are going to match and do this unless it's something that is just so far off the radar of what we've seen in terms of contracts. So I just, you know, again, the media – you know, look, they've told you all, they told you Wallace was going to leave. They told you, you know, offer sheets are coming down the pike. None of this is, I just want to, we've said it's not happening. It's not happening. And I'm more convinced than ever. And I was 99% convinced before.
And the thing, on top of that, what'd you say that Mark Caballi had said?
He just tweeted that he thinks if somebody puts
it. Oh, yeah. Well, and let's face it, it would have to be a first year that would have to be a cap hit of right around what the salary, I mean, what the franchise tag would have been. Anything more than a 9. Whatever $5 million first year cap hit would be nearly impossible for the Steelers to match there. So, yeah, he's right on there. A little breaking.
Dave, look, I disagree. I don't think that's the case. I mean, I think they'll find the money. I said I think if the number goes up to $14 or $15 million in the front year, the Steelers may have a problem, but I think they're going to match something. If somebody wants to blow their cap up, I think if it's an $11 million front year thing, the Steelers are going to match this.
I disagree, because I think if they were going to go that far, then they would have thrown the franchise tag on them, in my opinion. I just don't think they have.
Why do that? Because if they don't think anybody's going to match, they get them for 2.7 this year. You save yourself $6 million. It's a business decision.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying, is they don't think it's going to happen. So,
right. I agree. But I think if it does happen, they'll match.
Not any more than $10 million.
Kevin Colbert is on the record as saying that. Now, that could be a smokescreen, but, you know.
Well, he says they have the final say to match. They decide whether or not he stays and goes. That number, to me, in my opinion, cannot be a cap hit in 2012 of more than $10 million. It just
all right, well, we're talking about a couple million dollars difference. I mean, I think if it's $12 million in the front and it's back, it's cheaper in the back, the Steelers will find a way to make it happen.
Well, hopefully we don't get to that.
Yeah.
The Minnesota Vikings just came across by Adam Schefter, have signed tight end John Carlson. I really thought Carlson would have been a nice fit in the Steelers offense as a second tight end, but of course he's premier enough that you knew he was going to get attraction early on in the free agency period. That's probably a pretty good signing for the Vikings. Isn't Vincente Shenko, isn't he a free agent with the Vikings over there this year?
Vincente Shenko, let me give it a quick look. Off the top of my head, I don't have that answer, but let me give it a quick scan here.
I'm looking too. Yeah, he is. He's an unrestricted free agent. Vincente Shenko is. So, John Carlson, pretty much they're going
to Vincente Shenko and all that he brings to the game.
You know, the guy, if he keeps his head screwed on tight,
I was laughing about the camera shot.
Yeah. Who will forget that? Huh? Evidently you did. You know, speaking of tight ends, the Steelers evidently have a visit scheduled with Chicago Bears unrestricted free agent tight end Kellen Davis. This is a guy that's intriguing. You know, he was a 2008 draft pick out of Michigan State by the Bears. He played in all 16 games last season. He started 15 of those. He only registered 18 receptions, which is not surprising in a Mike Martz run offense. Had 206 yards receiving to go along with five receiving touchdowns out of 18 catches. The guy is big and he is long. He can kind of split outside, kind of just, you know, not used. And you got to remember, the Bears is also a team that signed Matt Spaeth away last free agency period as well, too. So this is a guy that's going to fly under the radar a little bit. He evidently has visits scheduled with the Dallas Cowboys and the Cincinnati Bengals as well. Remember that the Steelers do have a need at the tight end position with Wesley Saunders slated to be suspended for the first four games of the 2012 season. David Johnson, of course, was tendered as restricted free agent. That tender is no guarantee of nothing for David Johnson. All that means is he's getting an invite to training camp. So don't read too much into the tender of David Johnson. We do not know the type of offense that Todd Haley wants to run yet, so everything outside of that is very, very speculative. The Steelers, of course, could address the tight end position somewhere in the draft as well, too, albeit it's not a very good tight end class this year on top of it. So that's the only free agent visit right now that we have scheduled. There were rumors yesterday. People amaze me, stuff they pick up on message boards and on Twitter, that Peyton Hillis was waiting at the Steelers' door at 4 o'clock for a visit. There was also something that surfaced that Mike Tolbert was waiting on the Steelers' door yesterday for a free agent visit. There has been nothing that's come out that has substantiated either one of those things happening. In fact, Hillis and Tolbert both, I believe, are scheduled to visit the Kansas City Chiefs sometime this week as well. And look, there's just no money right now to until they settle what's going to happen with Mike Wallace, there's not going to be anything but low signings such as a Kellen Davis type signing until the situation, I believe, with Mike Wallace is resolved. So, Twitter at times can turn into a fast-moving Wikipedia at times.
Yeah, no question. There's a lot going on. Let's touch on a couple things, and then we'll throw it to our interview with Matt Williamson of NFL, of ESPN.com and Scouts, Inc. One of the things, Dave, is we've seen we saw a trade happen yesterday, and there's been some news. Brandon Marshall got traded from Miami to Chicago in return for two third-round draft choices, a third round in 2012, a third-rounder in 2013. News has come out that on Saturday night, early Sunday morning, Brandon Marshall, outside a club in New York, about 10 blocks from where I am right now, allegedly struck a woman in the face, and then she waited until Monday and filed a police complaint, and she said she waited a day because she was worried because of Marshall's elevated status, I think is the term maybe the Post used. And now the media has gotten into this whole issue because Brandon Marshall clearly has a history of being a bad character that, the Bears should have known better, blah, 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 all this kind of stuff. First of all, it sounds like both sides knew of the event before the trade happened. And second of all, an alleged assault in today's NFL is really something, even the Steelers can't, stand on a soapbox and, talk about character stuff. If you traded for Brandon Marshall, this is kind of the stuff you're going to get. And I don't think the Bears make or don't make that trade if this had just come up. What are your thoughts on that?
He has a problem that one of my brothers has, and that's being in the wrong place at the wrong time, but it never is his fault.
Yeah.
But that being said, the deal makes sense. Yep. Of course, immediately everybody wanted to point that Peyton Manning, said he wasn't going to play with him, and that's the reason he was sent down the line. I still don't think that had anything to do with it. I think they just Marshall had his problems as he has had with other teams, as far as being a bit of a cancer. Cutler, evidently has a good relationship with him. He seems to think, and the Bears had the need at the wide receiver position. That was a good fit. I mean, it wasn't obvious before it actually happened. Some people are saying, oh, that was so obvious it was going to happen. No, it wasn't. But when you look at it on the backside, I think it was a good deal. I think Marshall will add what the Bears need as far as a wide receiver goes, and we'll just have to see how the indiscretions and all play out off the field.
Yep, I agree. It's a good deal for them. They've signed Weans as a return guy. Maybe Devin Hester's on the block, and we'll get into some more of this, but a lot of stuff going on, a lot of stuff going on in the division, and let's take a break here, and we'll come back with Matt Williamson, and we'll talk about some of the QB movement, some of the division movement, and some of the re-signings that have been made within the league that flying a little bit under the radar because it's the guys changing teams are a little bit more the sexy topic right now. So thanks for listening, and we'll be right back with Matt Williamson of ESPN.com. Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. As I said, we're pleased to have as our guest Matt Williamson of ESPN.com and Scouts, Inc. You can follow Matt on Twitter, at WilliamsonNFL. Matt, thanks for taking the time to be with us here on the Terrible Podcast.
Oh, it's great to be back. How you guys doing?
Great, thanks. Let's get right in it, Matt. One of the things with free agency, all the see stuff is guys changing teams. But you put an article up, an insider article, today. It got posted today about the important re-signings, and we've seen a few more of them today since your article went up. What are your thoughts on some of the guys you'd like to highlight who maybe aren't, people aren't thinking about or talking about right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's important. You need to keep your own in some instances. And, you know, two guys that really stood out that I highlighted were Red Bryant, you know, a really good fit for Seattle's defense, had a fantastic year. That's an up-and-coming defense with a really good young secondary. You know, I think they're right knocking on the door of being one of the better defenses in the league, and it was key to keep that guy. That's fine work. And in the opposite situation, in San Diego, they kept their center, Hartwig, and that's perfect because it kind of puts the finger in the hole of the dike there for a little bit too, because, I mean, they're losing guys left and right. You can't allow that offensive line to totally be reshuffled. So you need some stability, and particularly the guy, you know, who's doing all the line calls and he's been there. That's very important.
Go ahead, Dave.
Go ahead. You can shoot it, Dave. Go ahead.
Looking inside the AFC North Division, of course, we've talked about the Steelers stuff all the time. Not surprised that they're not active in free agency per the usual, especially with the cap situation the way it is. Looking at the other teams in the division, we see this morning that the Ravens lost Corey Redding. First, we want you to speak on that and how big of a loss that might be for them. And what's going on inside the division? We see the Bengals have a couple running backs coming in as well. So talk about some movement going on within the division.
Well, the Ravens don't have a ton of money to spend either. So, I mean, they're kind of taking the Steelers approach to things, which I think is fine. You know, they're an established team. They're like the Steelers. They're going to find some bargains over the next couple of weeks, probably not in the next couple of days. Cool. That works. They're still going to be there when it matters most. Losing Redding, it really reminds me of when Rex Ryan left to become the Jets head coach. Well, he took Leonard with him at safety, and he took Bart Scott with him to help, you know, bring the Ravens defense to the new place, you know, bring them to the Jets and teach them the Ravens way. Well, that's what they're doing in Indianapolis. You know, they're going to try to install – they could make a more drastic change. I mean, it used to be a cover two, dome, speed, light linebackers, you know, always playing with the lead – edge or pass rush, and now they're going to try to be the Ravens, which are big and physical and multiple and nasty, and Redding is going to be a key component of that for the short term, you know, to groom until other people are able to take over while acting as a mentor. The two Ohio teams in the division, I've just crushed them lately on Twitter. I've been extremely active on Twitter, and I don't understand what either one of these teams is doing. And I know the Bengals are cheap, but they have a ton of money to spend. They had a very good year last year. They have two, you know, first-round picks right now. The world's their oyster, and they're not doing a thing about it. And yeah, they're cheap, but, man, go get something. I mean, I look at this team, and they have to spend. I mean, there's a floor that you have to spend. So why not go get a difference maker? I mean, for them not to be involved with Carl Nix, I mean, they have a big hole at guard. I know they don't like to spend money on guards. Well, do it anyways and dominate the division. It's there for the taking. Why not be aggressive? Go out and get one of these receivers and put them opposite A.J. Green. Go out and get a corner like Rodgers or Finnegan and really turn it into a dominating defense. Instead, they're kind of sitting on their hands, and a lot of targets for them are falling through. You know, maybe they get a Grubbs or somebody like that, but I don't understand what they're doing because it's all there for the taking for them, that they can pretty much get whatever they want and maybe set it up on draft day that they could go package their picks and go get a guy like Richardson and be, you know, the franchise running back, you know, and have that kind of luxury to really make you a tough team. The Browns, you know, it's all about the quarterback with them. You know, McCown isn't good enough. To me, McCown's a typical backup West Coast quarterback and a high-end backup. But
And just so people know, he just signed this morning, didn't he?
Who's that?
McCown?
I'm sorry, I said McCown. I meant McCoy.
Colt McCoy.
My fault. I'm talking about McCoy. McCoy is a high-end West Coast backup, and he's not a starter. He's not going to get you past 6-10. You know, I mean, that's what he is. Well, apparently now, you know, I killed those guys for not being the team to move up to get RG3 because that team needs their new LeBron. That city needs their LeBron, and that's exactly who RG3 is. And I think every Steeler fan out there is thrilled that Griffin III is not going to the Browns. So, and oh, by the way, they had a lot more assets than Washington did. They just didn't have the guts to do it. You know, they were closer to number two pick in the draft from four as opposed to six. They had another first-round pick. They just didn't want to put that much on the table for an elite prospect, which I don't think is acceptable behavior. And now
let me ask Matt, we talked a little bit on 970 ESPN a couple weeks ago about what a good draft they had last year. Are they taking that, you know, kind of Steeler approach and just saying, you know, even though we're missing the quarterback, we can build all these components and then find the guy?
Maybe, but I don't know how you find a guy, you know.
Where's that guy going to come from? You didn't think Matt Flynn was the right guy.
I don't think Matt Flynn's the right guy, but he certainly is a lot better than what they're playing with. It doesn't sound like they're all that interested in him. It just seems like no matter what, they're going to settle. You know, even with Flynn, I think Flynn gets them to 8, 9, and 7. But I bet they end up with like a Brandon Weeden or a Cousins or somebody like that with that early second-round pick. And blah, you know, I mean, then you're in the same position next year. I mean,
we agree that Tannehill's not the guy to take that high in the draft. They got to trade back to 15 or 20 to take him.
Well, I think he's the happiest guy in the world right now. You know, yeah. I think the Washington trade helps him. You know, there's three or four teams right now, Miami, Seattle, maybe even Kansas City, certainly Cleveland, that are all competing, in my estimation, for Flynn and Tannehill. I mean, I don't think Kansas City's going to go after Flynn, but those other teams might. And so that's going to leave three teams that all want Tannehill. So I think his stock's going to go through the roof, especially if he gets a chance to work out, which is his best strength. You know, I mean, he's been hurt, so nobody's really seen the guy, you know, do his athletic skills. So I think you don't take him at four, but you can't hold back too long. I mean, maybe you go back to 6, 7, 8 because I think Miami's going to be desperate. I mean, Miami can't land anybody right now. They're going to be, you know, desperate. Seattle could move up. Kansas City probably would love to take them at 11. So, you know, you can't fiddle around with it too much. And I just don't think it's good business by Cleveland.
Let me just follow up on that one. Let's say Peyton Manning doesn't go to Denver. Do the Browns become the leading candidate to get Kevin Cobb, to get Matt Moore? You know, as I've told you, I'm a Matt Moore fan. I think he's a little bit underrated. Do they become the team that gets the guy who gets displaced?
Cobb, yes. I don't think that Miami will get rid of Moore, though. He's not very expensive. Right. You might as well keep him as a high-end backup. There's no harm in keeping him. You don't know what Manning's next situation is. But if Cobb got released, then yes. But Cobb looks terrible.
Circling back to the Bengals real quick, and you mentioned need for wide receiver, and we know they have a ton of cap space, but Mike Brown likes to sleep on the mattress full of cash on top of it. And, of course, with Mike Wallace being the big restricted free agent right out there, there's only really, with what San Francisco has done, there's really only two teams that could really realistically make a run at Mike Wallace and give up that first-round pick, and the Bengals, and that being the Bengals and the New England Patriots, they're not laying low. I mean, this is out of the Mike Brown M.O. They're not going to make a run at Mike Wallace, right?
I don't think Cincinnati will. You know, if you look at Dalton, his skill set is West Coast, get it out quick, not a big-armed guy. They don't need two burners. You know, I mean, everybody would love to have Mike Wallace, but you have A.J. Green, who's a big-time deep threat. He's a speed guy. I think they need Dwayne Bowe. You know, I mean, they need a bigger, heavier, move-the-sticks, physical wideout opposite Green. That isn't Wallace, and Dalton isn't a big-arm guy to go deep anyway. So I don't like that fit, although they do have two first-round picks, which could make it kind of appealing. And, of course, you'd like to hurt the Steelers if you're them. I think New England's a real possibility. You know, the longer this goes, as wide receivers keep falling off the board, you know, Brandon Lloyd's still out there, and he's visiting San Francisco as we speak, which is kind of interesting.
And he's supposed to be high on the Pats' radar, right?
Yes, right. I mean, he's had all his success with Josh McDaniels, who's their new offensive coordinator. There's obviously a relationship there. He would fit a need, you know. So, you know, I think that New England is going to see what happens with him. But they have the picks, but they value him a great deal. But, boy, you add Wallace to that offense, it could be as good an offense as it's ever been. And the last thing you need to mention, though, is it was maybe, you know, after they signed Moss, I pretty much came out on Twitter and on the radio a couple spots and said, well, that takes them out of the Wallace running. You know, that they already got their deep threat. Alex Smith isn't a big-arm guy. That Smith isn't signed, and the Niners still have a lot more cap space, and all of a sudden now they're visiting with Brandon Lloyd. So, but if I'm them, and I'm truly interested in Lloyd, I'm even more interested in Wallace. You know, I think they picked 30th or 29th or something like that. You add that to that offense, you got it all then. So I think Steeler fans need to be worried about San Fran still and New England.
Well, the thing is, too, with the Moss thing that's come to light with that contract is it's not guaranteed at all. And there's nothing to keep them from just cutting them even before the season starts. So,
But
here's the other thing that David and I hit on the top of the show here with the Patriots. They've got Wes Welker on this tag right now. They need to work out a long-term deal. And just like Mike Wallace and his agent, Buzz Cook, are looking at all these numbers coming in from these wide receivers, so too is Wes Welker and his agent. And they've got to get Welker signed to a new deal first to lower that cap hit before they do anything. So would you agree with that?
Yes. They have a lot of they have a lot more flexibility with their franchise tag than other teams. And, oh, by the way, you know, Welker's not a young guy. He's had some injuries. He takes a ton of hits. You know, if you're the Patriots, you could say, hey, Wes, we're taking the franchise tag off you. You're gone. You know, we're going to put you out on the open market. We signed Wallace or Lloyd. We still have a lot of cap money. You groom Julian Edelman to be that slot guy, and you sort of change your offensive philosophy. Instead of going over the middle so much to the tight ends and Welker, you go over the middle two-thirds as much to the tight ends, but you throw bombs to Lloyd or Wallace. So,
I think you have a lot of jaws hit the floor around the league and in New England if that happens.
Yeah, but I think Welker needs the Patriots more than the Patriots need him.
It's a perfect fit of offense and guy. You're right. With Welker at 31, I don't think the Patriots are looking to do a five-year deal. You know, I'm sure they'd like to do a three-year deal maybe, but, you know, I don't go much further than that.
And it's also a very deep wide receiver draft, so they very well could use an early pick on a wideout, too, and groom him to be the next guy. So,
hey, before we let you go, Matt, make sure you're following Matt on Twitter, and you can read his chats on ESPN.com. On Twitter, he's at WilliamsonNFL. Just in the first 24 hours that we've had here, could you highlight two or three things that have jumped out at you in terms of signings, whether they were the amount of money somebody made or who went where that you kind of thought were particularly interesting?
Well, Washington choosing, and I don't know if they knew it at the time. It's easy to say this after the fact, but they more or less spent the same amount of money on the combination of Garcon and Morgan at wide receiver that Tampa Bay spent on Vincent Jackson. If I'm Washington, I would much rather go in with Vincent Jackson, Santana Moss, Gaffney, Hankerson, as opposed to having to now cut Moss because you don't have the roster space for him, Gaffney, Hankerson, Morgan, Garcon, and not really have a number one in the group.
Right. And in terms of guys, you talked about this. I don't know if you saw the Tampa signings, and Dave and I have touched on this a touch, but it was very unique in terms of their contracts. They aren't giving out signing bonuses. The Vincent Jackson contract is a little bit front-loaded. It's guaranteed in the first couple years, but there's no prorated money over this. This is kind of a new approach that we really haven't seen in the NFL under the cap issues, that they're going to, you know, pay their costs up front. And I know Major League Baseball Players Association would never want this to happen because they always want the highest average annual value to be on the back end so numbers keep going higher. Is that something that struck you as unique or is something that teams will look to do more of?
To be very honest with you, you know, free agency's been open now for 21 hours. I haven't had a chance to really dissect many of the numbers, so you telling me that is the first I heard of it. It is very interesting, and I'm excited to kind of dig into more what the logic is behind that. And we have our own podcast, the Football Today podcast. We're having Andrew Brandt on tomorrow on Thursday, who's a real capologist type of guy.
Tell him we were killing him for getting the Steeler thing wrong all 30 days.
I'll bring it up. But I'm definitely going to ask him that tomorrow. I'm curious what his thoughts are on how, you know, the new wave maybe of structuring contracts is going. It's pretty interesting.
Okay, great stuff. Well, Matt, I know you're pressed for time, and as always, we appreciate getting you on, and we'll get you on again during the middle of the season when things have settled down a little bit, middle of the offseason when we can digest all these moves.
Sounds good. Maybe we can talk draft a little bit.
Super stuff. Thanks for being with us.
All right, guys. Thanks again.
All right.
And that's going to wrap things up for this episode of the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. Again, thanks to Matt Williamson. Of course, we will be back with you Friday. It seems like we get I know Steeler fans are interested. I feel like we get bogged down in this Mike Wallace stuff maybe more than we should, Dave, but it's always good stuff. Anything you want to throw out there as we close?
Yeah, we'll analyze and dice up these contracts a little bit more as these numbers filter out on Friday as well. As always, we appreciate all the comments on Twitter. You can follow me at Steelers Depot on Twitter. Follow David Todd on Twitter at Hammer Speaks. The show's at Terrible Podcast. A lot of good emails, too.
We got another one today. We got a new country to check off the list. We got an email from Denmark, Mikkel Henriks. Thanks, Mikkel, for the email. And you were talking about the punishment for the Cowboys and the Redskins, and we'll get into that a little more. I think it was calculated by how much they went over in terms of how much contracts they used that were kind of deemed inappropriate by the league. So the $36 million kind of matched what they gave Haynesworth, Hall, and the third player who escapes my mind. But we'll check into that further. I think that's about 15 different countries we've heard from, Dave, and of course, people all over the country that always puts a smile on our face.
Absolutely, and you can email the show, chime in from wherever you are. Just, you know, let us know where you are in the country, where you are in the United States. We always like to hear in these things. Give us good, bad feedback. Make sure you're hitting the show up on iTunes as well. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. And as always, we appreciate all of our listeners, appreciate the feedback on Twitter and on email as well.
Thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.